Okay, welcome everybody. My name is Stephanie, or Steep, S-T-E-E-P. You'll hear a lot of people calling me that, so I answer to either. And welcome. Let me know if this is your first time coming to the Kadampa Center, just so I know. Okay, welcome. Thanks. And is this your first DB class? Okay. So it's meant, discovering Buddhism is meant to be either you can come in at any point or you can go from like start to finish. But each module focuses on a certain topic and it can definitely be standalone. So welcome to everybody. There's just so many different things to cover. What I'd like to do is just give you a little bit of overview of what we are going to be talking about during this, I think it's like 7 weeks or something, and give you a little bit of idea of the schedule. But before we do any of that, let's just take a minute to like, I need a minute to kind of unwind. And we always start these classes and also any of our own practices with just setting our intention. So we're going to take a minute just to close our eyes and focus inward, and I'm going to walk you through that in a little bit, but make sure that your posture is conducive to that. So if you're sitting in a chair, make sure that your feet are flat on the floor. And the most important thing is that your spine is aligned as straight as possible. And you, if you'd like, you can place your hands in the traditional meditative posture where the left hand is on bottom. The right hand is gently placed on top. The thumbs just gently touch as though you're holding a piece of paper between them. And then you rest this just around, a little below your navel. And your elbows are out away from your body so that you can, you know, have deeper breaths. You want to relax your jaw. In order to do that, you can unclench your teeth, place the tip of your tongue at the back of your upper teeth. And tuck your chin a little bit to help lengthen your spine. And then either gently close your eyes or leave them a little bit open so that the light coming in will keep you alert. If you want to be relaxed, but alert. We're always trying to tame the monkey mind. And we've been doing a whole lot of stuff today. So just take several breaths, and as you exhale, try to let go of all the thoughts about what you're going to do, what you have done, and just try to bring your awareness right back to the sensation of breathing and being right in this moment. Each inhale and exhale is one round. Let's just count silently to yourself to five. You know, inhale, exhale, that's one. Just helps sometimes to have your mind placed on something, the breath, the count. Bringing your mind gently back to that each time it wanders. And then as we set our intention for this practice, take a minute to think about what an amazing chance this is that we even have the ability to study. That all the factors in your life make it possible for you to sit here today and contemplate this topic of bodhicitta. How amazing is that, first of all? But then there's a lot of people who have that ability but don't have the interest. So on top of having the ability, you also have an interest. So take a minute to reflect on that. Recognize how precious it is. And not only do you have the interest, you found a place where it's possible to explore this. You found other people who share this interest. There's a lot of places you wouldn't be able to find this. So in all of North Carolina, you have found a place where you can study and talk about this. And on top of that, you found a place where there is a perfectly qualified teacher, Geshe Gelug, growing up in a monastery in South India, absorbing teachers and teachings from some of the most qualified people on the planet. And here he is in the same city with you. So all these amazing conditions have come together, and try to really generate the confidence that just by focusing your mind on this topic, there will a result will be produced at some point. That have the confidence that your interest and your time and attention to it will result in something. So then just like if we were at the gym and we were setting goals and setting our intention before a workout, take a minute to think about what your intention is for coming here tonight. You know, it takes a lot on the first Monday back to school and work to carve time out, come here on a chilly night. So think about what it is that you're hoping to gain. To be a happier person, wiser person, and that how as you achieve this goal, who else will be affected by it? People you know and people you don't know. So in this way you try to expand your intention. It has to start somewhere, start with yourself, and then try to generate it to include more and more people. So they say every action, if you start with the intention in the beginning, refresh it in the middle, and then at the conclusion, you dedicate it. So in the middle of today, I'm going to remind you to kind of go back to your intention. Okay, so now with your intention firmly in mind, you can open your eyes. That was a very short little meditation, but it's the way we usually start. So this class is titled not just bodhicitta, but how to develop bodhicitta. This is a tall order. So I will start with a disclaimer. I'll do my best. You know, I'm studying this with you. There's lots of great material. There's tons of amazing material on this topic. We could talk about this for the rest of our lives, and it would just be amazing. I can't think of anything better to do than to really put our minds on this topic. It's mind-blowing. I remember this one teacher who I brought to New Orleans to talk to a group of people there, and he was really reminding us how that there's many places in the world that you wouldn't even be allowed to talk about this, that we take our freedom of religion so for granted, but that there's so many places that you wouldn't even be allowed to talk about this topic, and that some of the great teachers who we'll be reading traveled for 14 months on a boat to places to get some of the basic information that we can just click on the internet and get now. So it's a really incredible topic. So first of all, let's define what bodhicitta is. And the reason I'm wearing this headset, in case some of you might think, look a little strange, which is there's people who watch this at home. So we've got a little camera up there, and there's people all around North Carolina now who are able to click in and watch this. Okay, so bodhicitta. Anybody want to take a stab at what that means or what your understanding of it is? Okay. Right. So, okay. So what she said is, in case you didn't hear, is bodhi, the actual, is made up of two words. And bodhi means awakened. And awakened from what? What are we saying? Awakened from ignorance. Right? So bodhi means awakened from ignorance. And citta is another word for mind. So the awakened mind, basically the enlightened mind. A lot of times you'll hear people talking about it as though it's synonymous with compassion, but so much bigger than just compassion. Okay, because once you have really achieved bodhicitta, you don't go, and you know, compassion is something that we kind of generate here and there. We see something on YouTube and we feel something and then kind of comes and goes, but when you've really achieved bodhicitta, then it's not coming and going anymore. It's just solid all the time. And these are two kind of things we need to just kind of I need to check off the list that we've covered before we can move on. So this is a good working definition, knowing the actual root of the word. You can also think of it like when we're setting our motivation, that bodhicitta means that your wish to achieve enlightenment so that you can help everyone else. It's the altruistic wish, not just the altruistic wish, but the altruistic wish for achieving enlightenment. And so, you know, I always have to go back to that before a practice. Like, no, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? What can it possibly do? And I have little tricks that I'll show you that get me there, because there's so much stuff that's, you know, going the other direction. It's like fighting against the tide to generate that over and over and over again. We have that. This is what teachers talk about all the time. We have, you know, our negative mind is the result of our eons worth of habits. You know, our mind is habituated into those ruts. And so we make the effort to get it out. And so, you know, a bodhisattva, or achieving bodhicitta, what is it? It's not something like we stumble into it. It's like, oh, here it is. It's our mind. And so it's you know, you'll hear all kinds of analogies. And Venerable Rubina, who's going to be here for 2 weeks leading this, she probably would make the analogy of playing the piano. So you might, if you had a really good memory, remember the very first time you even saw a piano. Right? When you're maybe 3, whatever, you saw a piano. And the very first time you plunked one of those keys. And then there was a time where you learned the scales. And then there was a time where you played a couple of little songs, and then you kept going, and you kept practicing, and soon you were able to play Beethoven. It wasn't just that you sat down one day, oh, here's a piano, and you played, I've been looking for this piano, people keep telling me about a piano, and I heard some Beethoven the other day, and now I can do it. So it's the same thing with that. Like, I got really excited one day because I realized, you know, if you keep practicing this, there's going to be one time, one day, one lifetime where there's that tipping point. Boom. And there, now you've got it. It's not going to be, again, out of the blue. It's going to be that tipping point of like when you were able to play Beethoven. Not that I can, but I'm capable of it. I know if I sat down for the next whatever years and practiced piano, I would be able to play the piano, pretty sure. But, you know, this is much more worth my time, and I have to have that same confidence. I think that's really important for us all to generate, that we have the minds, we have the abilities to generate bodhicitta, and this is something that will stay with us forever and ever then. So, so just with that little introduction, I want to start gathering some of your kind of larger questions that you might have about this as you come in so that I can make sure that they're covered. And I'm not answer them right now, but if you're like, well, this is something I've always wanted to know, I want to make sure that we're somehow going to cover that in the material. So is there anything that you are coming in with right now that you're like, I really want to see? Yeah, that'd be great, yeah. So we're going to have you say it into the mic so that people at home can hear your question as well. So anything right off the top that you've got that you'd like to share? And a lot of the questions, I'm so glad Venerable Rubina will be here because then she can answer them. So, but I want to collect them. And I know one for me that always comes up is it's just an ongoing question. I kind of spiral around and I get a little closer to an answer and then I kind of come around again and again. Is that kind of line between when you're really doing something that's helpful and when it's just enabling somebody? And I get stuck on that with this topic a bit here and there. I have an answer for you, at least a little bit of answer that I've accumulated. Does that trip anybody else up? Yeah? Okay. So questions like that, any question that you've got, let me know, because I want to make sure we cover it. Then the other thing I want to start off with is in this little introduction to some of the basics. You're going to hear, and it'll probably be on the test, that there's two kinds of bodhicitta. Does that ring a bell? Anybody heard that there's two kinds? Okay, so there's one that can be called absolute, and one that can be called relative. And there's an easy way to remember that, which is this is the wish to be able to help all beings. And this is the ability to. So this is kind of the aspiring bodhicitta. Sometimes you'll hear it called that way. But in addition to that definition, I want to read this so I can get it exactly right. The absolute also includes being able to see emptiness directly. Because it's only with that kind of wisdom that you would know how to help somebody. And that's how we get in trouble, because we don't necessarily know if this is helpful or enabling or, you know, just what exactly we're doing. So the wish, we can always have the wish without getting into any kind of trouble, but it's only when we are able to really see reality directly and understand emptiness and the full package that that we're able to, that it's absolute bodhicitta. Let me see if I can give you a good quote here. The two aspects. The two aspects of bodhicitta, relative and absolute, include the altruistic wish and the wisdom of emptiness respectively. While these may seem different, they are the two wings needed for, you know, to fly. Here's a quote Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life. The true realization of emptiness is impossible without the practice of perfect compassion, while no compassion can ever be perfect without the realization of wisdom of emptiness. Does that make sense? I'll read it again. I see a couple of concerned faces. The true realization of emptiness, and if you get tripped up over what that means, it's just the way that things really work, the real reality. So the true realization of the way things work is impossible without the practice of perfect compassion. While no compassion can ever be perfect without the realization of the wisdom of emptiness. So it's just the wisdom and compassion wings together. That makes sense. Okay. That came from, Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, which is an amazing book. It's written like a poem. There's so many different things to read to get more steeped into this topic. So I'll try to mention several as we go along. But that's one that I would certainly recommend. Yeah.
Um, I just wanted to know if relative bodhicitta is synonymous with contrived bodhicitta.
Well, contrived, you know, sometimes has a real negative connotation. You having to generate it, it's the wish, okay? So it's something that you're, okay, I've heard this example quite a bit. I'm making plans right now to go visit my hometown, New Orleans, okay? So I have the wish to go. That's it. Okay, I'm not faking it. Sometimes people think of the word contrived as kind of like faking it, right? I really do have the wish to go. I want to see some family. I'm making plans. I rented a car. That's the plan and the process and the thinking and the, you know, sometimes I might have to generate it a little bit, but that's the wish to go. And when you have the real wish to achieve enlightenment, you may have to get knocked down a couple of times, and you got to pick yourself up and, you know, look at the obstacles. But it's not that difficult to keep working, keep building that wish. Then the absolute, you're already there. I'm already in New Orleans. I don't have to think about going there because I'm there. One is the wish, and one is you're there. You already know you've achieved it. You've made that long trip. So she's asking a little bit more of the subtleties of the absolute. It's not, again, like it's not something I've stumbled into. I put my rear end in the car and drove 14 hours. And so there's that tipping point when suddenly I'm in the city limits. It's not a surprise to me. You know, I drove all that way, and suddenly I can see the Superdome, and, you know, I know that now I'm in New Orleans. It's not a surprise. It took all that time. It took that effort. And so, you know, it's so hard for us to see so many things. You know, I always tell myself, don't get tricked by your eyes, because we don't know all the merit that we've accumulated. We don't know but if we really step back and look at it, we can see progress that we're making. We can see that our efforts do pay off. You know, that if I was practicing the piano, there's plenty of times I would get frustrated and think I'm not making any progress. But if I really sat down and thought about it, I would remember, yeah, I was just doing scales last month, and now I can do this. So it's the same kind of thing. It's one thing leads to another, and eventually you're in New Orleans, which I am making now as an analogy to enlightenment. Everyone in New Orleans will be stunned. But it is full of saints. And they're in the playoffs. So anyway. Anyway, I think you get my point. Once you're in New Orleans, you don't really have to think about it. You're in New Orleans all day long. So once you're in absolute bodhicitta, they say it's like every breath is, you know, we're going to learn how to do Tonglen, which is something what you do with your breathing, and it's all about compassion, and you're doing this very physical visualization, and it's conjoined with your breathing. They say when you achieve bodhicitta, then every breath, it's not spontaneous, but it's every breath is Tonglen. Every single action, everything you're doing is just immersed in it, because it's the same thing as being in New Orleans. You can't get out of it. You're there. Everything is a Tonglen practice. So we can only, you know, we can think about that and be inspired by it and just keep, you know, plugging away. Sooner or later, we'll see the outline on the horizon, and that'll just then, you know, that's one of the reasons why I said what I said in the beginning about thinking about our precious chance, and I went through that whole list, because that is really kind of the skyline on the horizon. You know, just like the skyline of a city as you're getting closer, the things that I'm mentioning, for countless beings on this planet, they don't have any of the things that I just listed in that meditation. And so that's one of the meditations to really do, is to go over and review in your mind what are your incredible opportunities. And one time I did this, I remember I was sick when I did it too, and I felt like I'd won the lottery. You know, I mean, some might have been my little fever I had, but but I, you know, it helped me kind of get to that place of I'm a lottery winner. When you compare yourself, in that way, to the chances that other people or beings don't have, you really do have this incredible chance. Oh, which reminded me of something I wanted to say. Oh, so if you've been in the DB class, what was the last one that was led? What was it on? Okay. Samsara Nirvana. So do you see how this is kind of a logical then next step? Okay. So some of these terms might be new to some of you, but I'll explain it. But there's a quote that says, you know, bodhicitta is the only gate to the Mahayana path. The Mahayana just means the greater vehicle. And some people think of greater meaning like better. It's not really that. It means larger. So if you're driving a truck out of, I don't know, some place you don't want to be, you know, some really awful place. Well, if you were driving one of those little cars, right, or even just a moped, there's room for you on that moped. That's going to get you out of there. That's fantastic. But if you want to bring a bunch of people with you, you're going to need a bigger car, or even a bigger car, and a bigger car, and a bigger car to get more people out of that city that's sinking, right? So that's the same thing with these vehicles that we're talking about. The Mahayana vehicle is larger to bring more out. And so the only way to do that is to generate bodhicitta, which is the wish to bring more people out. Okay? So this is kind of like everything else that we've been studying and talking about, everything else about morality, everything else about taming your mind, everything else about reducing your anger, eliminating your anger, that's necessary to, that's the foundation upon which then bodhicitta rests. Okay, so those things, it doesn't mean that you've got to nail them all down perfectly. What I think of is that we're practicing all these things, and they're all taking effect and moving us towards that. And of course, as we go, we might see, okay, I really need to work a lot more on patience. I need to work a lot more on my jealousy. And, you know, we each have more homework in one area than the other. We're still looking, though, down the road about, okay, this is where I want to go. And the more we understand where we want to go, the more we'll continue to try to get there. Okay, imagine for a minute that you're in prison. You're not going to have to, probably not going to have to generate the wish to get out. You're not going to have to wake up every morning and go, okay, now let me see, why do I want to get out again? The food. You're going to have reasons to want to get out every single day. Every single minute you're going to be aware that you're in prison and you want to get out. So some of the meditations in Buddhism are about trying to remind yourself that you're in that kind of a prison. That's probably what Samsara Nirvana module was all about. And that's the first noble truth, you know, the truth of suffering, because it's so nice here sometimes that we have to go, oh yeah, wait a minute, this is a good looking prison. And, you know, that's one of the things to do is to kind of remind yourself, okay, right, there are these problems with this beautiful place. Doesn't mean that you can't enjoy things, but you just remind yourself that it's not that kind of reliable enjoyment. So anyway, we're in prison now. We're not having to generate that every day because it's all around us. The food, the people, the smells, the noise, the everything. It's terrible. Now you've heard about this way that you might be able to get out. You are now concocting a scheme to get out of prison because why? I mean, you can already imagine what it would feel like, right, to be in that prison and how fearful and awful and just, ugh. So now you've heard about a way that you might be able to get yourself out of there. Not bad, right? Not bad. Now imagine if you could also get all of the other people out of that prison with you. What would that feel like? You know, or now you are going to figure out this way to get out that you heard about. You're going to, you know, those movies where people are taking like copious notes on how the guards are moving here and the laundry truck's coming there and got to put the dirt over here. You know, you're that. You're studying that for like a year, right? Not just to get your little butt out, but everybody else is out. That's bodhicitta. And so I always go back to that example before I do a prostration in the morning. It's like, because it's so easy for me to, well, not easy, but I can get to the place where like, oh yeah, I want to get out of samsara. And it sometimes it takes a little more effort into like, no, what's bodhicitta again? Why am I doing this for other people? And then when I always go back to that prison example, it's golden for me. Maybe because I taught writing in a prison for a couple of years. It's not hard to imagine being there. I used to dream that they have to wear different colored shirts depending on their crime. And I remember I had these dreams that I'm in the women's prison. I'd go, oh, I'd look down at my shirt real quick, like, you know, like, what color am I wearing? You know, yellow is death row. I just remember always like, oh, I don't have on yellow. Okay. So it's not hard to, you know, and I, you can try to use everything. Use the movies you watch. You know, kind of like, I almost like keep a little notebook of what I can use around me to generate that wish to get everybody out, whether it's a burning building. You know, for some people, it's in certain situations, you know, they might not call themselves a Mahayanaist, right? But that's kind of more in their nature. Right off the bat, they're more like that than somebody else who might call themselves a Mahayanaist, but then in that situation, not really so much. Anyway, if you're sitting here, then you have an interest and a desire to develop bodhicitta, which is like unbelievable. I was just reading this article His Holiness had written where he was saying that in the beginning when he was studying as a younger man, he really felt like, that's too much. I'm not going to be able to do that. I really want to focus on, you know, some of the basics and some of the foundation. And then after a while, he started to gain more confidence and he thought, I do want to meditate more on altruism. And now he says he has more confidence in his abilities, and or this is the time of the art in the interview. He said when he, every morning he meditates on altruism, and he finds himself in tears at it, the beauty of it, just the amazing, just the fact that we can even comprehend what that word means is something remarkable. And so then, you know, for him, he says it brings tears to his eyes when he just thinks about what altruism is. So one thing I would encourage you to do is just kind of collect articles for yourself from around the news that inspire you, that remind you of altruism, that remind you of bodhicitta, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't have to be Buddhist articles. I was reading this book about this young woman who, she was a competitive swimmer, but she was really slow, so she wasn't winning anything. So she got into long-distance swimming and outdoor swimming in the oceans and then swimming the channels and all these things. And what she would do is, she would swim places between two different countries that were having some kind of tension to unite them. And I think she swam from Alaska to Russia or something, just incredible. And those two countries had, at that point, were very tense, and they had to kind of collaborate to make this happen. And I thought, that's a really good example. So I cut out the article, it was in the Times, and then I went and read the book. And to me, I need those everyday examples. I can't operate without them, you know. And then there was this doctor. Anyway, you'll find tons once you start looking. And I think, and then it'll help you when you're trying to explain this to somebody else. Okay, so we're going to do another quick little meditation, and then I need a break. I don't want to talk so much. Okay, so again, get in your position. Your meditative position. And before, I want to make sure everybody has something to focus on. So what we're going to meditate on is something or somebody that you really love, that where you feel that kind of like just unconditional. For a lot of us, it's a pet. You know, you think about your, or it doesn't even have to be your pet. It could just be looking at a fawn, you know. I mean, something you've seen on YouTube. Can everybody conjure up something like that? Because if not, we can go out to the pound and bring in some kittens. So, but just think right now about something that generates that just, feeling in your chest. You know, if this is, you know, you would do anything for that little being. And don't, you know, fret with it too much. Just try to generate that bubble of love that you feel and try to grow it a little bit, and just like it's like warm bath, and like settle into that feeling. Really see this creature, this person, this thing that generates that feeling for you, and breathe into it. Let it wash all over you. Feel how much love you have inside of you. if it were a color, you know, try to make it a color. If it were a feeling, like would it be a blanket or a coat or a, what would it be? And try for a minute to wrap yourself in it as well. Not just this pet or person or thing that you love, but try to imagine that now it's gotten even bigger than you and it's surrounding you. That love that you felt for that other is now holding you, surrounding you, completely unconditionally loving you. And notice how you feel. Does it change? Okay, and then open your eyes. And now what I'm going to do is something risky. There's a lot of you. I like to get people into groups, so it's really hard for people to start talking in this large group about what you might have just experienced. So with bodhicitta in your heart, I want you to try to form little groups. So some of you, you know, might not know anybody else here. I want people who always get together to get together with somebody else this time. So if you see somebody coming over to you who looks a little nervous, you know, wrap them up in that little blanket and bring them over to your group. Get into groups of like four or five, so it's not going to take too long to go around and talk. Once you get in your groups, then I'm going to give you directions, okay? So some of the people who have been here before, you know, try to pull in some of the people who are sitting way in the back. And find anywhere in the room you want, and then I'm going to ring a bell so I can tell you the next set of directions. Okay? You got about a minute to get in a group. Introduce yourself. Okay, well done. Everybody's in a group. Awesome. Okay, so here are your directions. Okay. All right, good. Okay, so here's your directions. For the first thing, I just want you to go around and talk to each other about how that felt. You know, were you able to accept that? Did it feel kind of awkward? Did it feel lovely? Did it feel sad? Because my feeling is that, you know, we can't really generate any of this bodhicitta unless we also feel love, you know. And so I read Thich Nhat Hanh saying that if we want other people to be able to take refuge in us or to be happy around us, we have to be the happiest person on the planet. We need to expand our happiness. We need to expand our self-love in order to do these other things that we're going to be talking about in this class. So we're the laboratory. You know, our obstacles are inside of us, and our love is inside of us. So that's why we started with that, like our own feeling of being loved, so that we can expand that, which then includes other people. So just talk for a little bit, as much as you feel comfortable sharing about what happened during that meditation, how well did it go, and you know, take like a couple minutes each, and then I'm going to move you on to the next topic. Okay, go. Thank you. Okay, try to come to a, try to wrap that up. Okay. So the next thing to share is obstacles that you already know for yourself that you want to work on. So for, I mean, not, you know, nothing, something that you want to share and something that you want to work on. So for example, for me, I have a hard time with crowds. You know, and so, like, it was really nice when everybody was gone during the holidays and there was no crowd in the Whole Foods or in the parking lots or anything. I loved it. And everybody came back and I felt myself getting really kind of tense and not very nice. So that's an obstacle I'm talking about, because now there's certain things that I can use to switch my mind another way. We're the only ones who can do that. It's not just like it's going to just change on its own. This is the scales we're talking about. So identify something that is one of those scales for you that you want to share. If you don't want to share it, that's fine too, but really identify it for yourself, because that's the kind of thing you can start to see some progress with in the next 6 weeks. So take a minute to think about that. Something you notice when you feel tight and small, you know, instead of the way that you'd like to feel. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, take a minute to finish up. Okay, and when you're done, come back to the larger group. Thank you. And my hope is, you know, that if you all return, you know, you'll be able to check in with each other in future classes, because there's so many awesome people here, and I'm an introvert, believe it or not. This is torture. I know. No, I mean I get a lot from the class, but it's not comfortable. So anyway, how did that go? Is that good? Yeah. We're going to talk. I mean, the whole point of the class is for you all to be able to come up with some antidotes and some things that will help remedy the obstacles that you just identified. And you'll probably be starting to identify other ones that you didn't identify in the very first class. And so that's a lot of what we'll be talking about and looking at. And then you'll have to kind of adjust and see, is it working in the way I wanted it to? Or that's the amazing thing is, like when I said, you're the laboratory, you're the pioneer, it's really your mind. This is why, you know, in Buddhism you'll always read, know your mind, because you're the only one who really knows that obstacle inside and out. You're the one who has to hear it constantly. So you know it, and you know when something's working and when it's not working. I wrote up here, because there's several different things we're going to cover, and one of them is, there's two different kind of ways to go about practicing bodhicitta. And there's two lineages of teachers, and one that we're just going to tiptoe into today, we'll talk a lot more about next week, is Seven Causes and One Effect. And it's an incredible practice, and the other one is giving and taking. So I'll talk a lot more about that next week, but I just want to introduce you to this whole idea, because it's very systematic. And it's brought to us by the great teacher Atisha, who traveled for 14 months in a boat to get to Indonesia to receive this teaching that now we can just get so easily. But it's very sequential stages where one thing leads to another. The recognition of all living beings as our mother through the development of love serves as the cause of compassion. The wholehearted resolve and the mind of enlightenment are the results, the fruit of the training. So after establishing a basis of equanimity, that's the foundation, is a basis of equanimity towards all beings, then we cultivate the recognition that all beings as our mother. And for some people, that's kind of a strange thing to think about, so there's different ways to look at it, just that all the connection we have to all beings, you know, if all beings as our mother is something that kind of trips you up, then you can think about somebody that you really, really care so much about and imagine that there's not that much different between that person and the other person, people in front of you. We'll be practicing it, so we'll get there. But the first thing then is that basis of equanimity. And there's lots of ways that people go about this. The one that's real classic that you hear about all the time is that understanding what we have in common with any living being, which is the wish to be comfortable, to be happy, and wanting to avoid something that makes us uncomfortable. We can see this with a spider. You know, it's not that hard for us to see, but it's hard for us to to hold in our, you know, it's hard for us to have that as our filter that we're looking through everything. But that is something we can practice with some of the obstacles that you just named. I'm going to give you an example. Some of you may have heard this example before. But as I already revealed, I don't really, I'm not fond of crowds. So one summer, I was in Newark Airport, and, you know, it was the middle of the summer. It was hot. There was a gazillion people. And I was waiting for my mom to get off this plane. And, you know, what I was hearing in my head constantly as I was being bumped and jostled and, you know, and listening to all these people, what was going on in my head was, oh, my God, I can't believe how many people there are. And, oh, my God, and there's this person and there's that person. It was just this endless tape. This is my obstacle. So all of a sudden I caught myself and I said, oh, wait a minute. I've been listening to people talk about how to change that. What can I do to change that tape that's running in my head? Huh. So I thought about that for a while, and now the plane was deboarding, and, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, this long tunnel, and then out comes a person, and it's not my mom, you know, and then this long tunnel, out comes another person, it's not my mom, and that's what I was doing. That's why I was also in noise, like, that's not her, and that's not her, and I said, let me change this. So if all beings are equal, I would look at this person who was coming out of the tunnel, who wasn't my mom, thinking, but what if that was, like, my favorite uncle? Then, you know, like, when you have a favorite person, every little thing about them looks so cute. And when you don't know that person, it's like, oh, my God, he's too tall or short, and whatever. You know, your mind is doing all these stupid things, right? They don't look so cute. But I thought, well, what if that was my cutie pie uncle or brother or somebody, you know? What if that was my cutie pie? They would look so cute. You know, and I it started to work. The next person that came out, you know, who in my other mind was like too slow or whatever, now they were just so cute. Everything about them was so cute. And by the fifth person, I was like in another world. I was no longer in this Newark airport. I mean, it still gives me chills to think about it, because I don't think anything has ever been as powerful since, maybe because it was the very first time I ever did it and it was working. And I was having that experience with each person that came out. What if that was the person I was standing here and waiting for and driven all this way to see? I would just be over the moon that they just came out of the tunnel. And I started to really have that feeling. By the time my mom came out, and she was probably last, I was so mellow. It didn't matter who bumped into me. It didn't matter what. I was in a little paradise in the middle of Newark Airport. And then I understood what everybody had been trying to teach me for all that time, which was that it was my mind that was creating my happiness or my suffering. It was my mind. And I'm the one who has to work the program, you know. And if I can catch it before it's gone too far, I can pull it back. That's the trick, to know when to go, oh, wait a minute. I'm veering off into the dangerous territory. So what I'd like you to do for your homework then is, and it depends on your obstacle a little bit, so you could try to morph it to fit your particular obstacle. But probably most of you have that same experience where you're somewhere where you don't want to be. You're waiting in a long line, or, you know, you're somewhere where you don't really want to be. And try what I was doing, which is just starting to look at people just a little bit differently, and see if you can switch that around a little bit. So it has to be when you're not in the, you know, if you're already happy, great. Then you can just kind of send them more love. But if you're standing there going, that's when you try to switch it. So that's one of your pieces of homework. The other piece is that, if you have the readings, then read the first two articles, because we're definitely going to talk about them. So this is on, if you're new to discovering Buddhism, there are readings, and they're on a disc that's for sale out in the bookstore in this whole Discovering Buddhism area. And it's not that expensive. I can't remember how much it is, but they'll have all the readings. So the homework is to read the first two. If you think you're only going to take this class, we are making it available for free. It's kind of the honor system. You can go onto the Kadampa Center website, and there's a member login area, and you create your own account. I think it still takes like 24 hours for you to get like a password approval or something. And then you can go in there to our little Discovering Buddhism area and look for our module on developing bodhicitta, and you can get the teachings for free that way. Okay. So the only required reading for this class is those is the readings that's on the module. I'm not, you know, there's lots of great books, but I just don't feel like we're going to have time to do that justice. I will continue to recommend things, though. The other thing that's really critical in looking at bodhicitta, and probably will certainly help with any of the obstacles you identified, is this concept that it's our self-cherishing mind that is the problem. When I first heard that, I was like, what are you talking about? Cherishing is such a lovely word. It was like saying self-love is our problem. But what self-cherishing is just another word for selfishness. It's putting yourself above and beyond and, you know, get out of my way, that kind of thing. You know, like I want my mom to come out of the tunnel and nobody else, that feeling. So what I want everyone to start looking at is examine that. Is that really causing a problem? When is it causing a problem? And why? And what can I do about it? So I was memorizing this thing that had this whole phrase, of course I've forgotten it now, but where it talks about self-cherishing is the root of all my suffering, and cherishing others is the gateway to all virtue. And I was on this airplane. I'm in airports a lot, apparently. But I was waiting for the plane to fill up, and so I was going over these things I was memorizing, and I was a little nervous about flying. Hadn't flown in a while, so I thought, well, okay, wait a minute. How is self-cherishing causing me a problem now? You know, I mean, I am nervous about flying, but that just seems to make sense. You know, we could fall out of the sky. How is that self-cherishing? And then I thought, wait a minute. I think I get it, because I'm not worried about these other people dying in this plane. I'm only really worried about me dying in this plane. And if this is the day that we're all going down in this plane, is this really what I want to spend my last couple of minutes or hours or whatever doing? It's like, you know, fretting. It completely expanded my view. I started looking at everybody else in the plane. I started thinking that they're also nervous about flying, probably. And that, you know, I could do something amazing here to help one of them if we actually had some kind of trouble. It's one of those things that's really hard to put into words, but it completely changed my whole flying experience and completely gave me a deeper understanding about self-cherishing. Because it wasn't something, a big, huge selfishness that everybody would recognize as a problem, like me first. But it was all about me. It was all about me. And when I changed that just to include other people into that worry, then everything changed. So those two things I'd like you to look at as well, because then when we come back next week, we'll be sharing those in groups, like really looking, be your own scientist about self-cherishing. Is it getting in the way? You know, there's some obvious times that you'll be able to note, but then try to look at some of the subtler times too. And just remember that this is something Geshe-la told me when I sent it out to you in case you're similar to me, which is that we're not talking about putting you out of the picture. In fact, you have to include yourself in the picture, which is why I did that whole meditation on love. So when we're talking about may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness, you have to include yourself in that. And that a lot of times I don't, you know, and that causes me a problem. So remember to include yourself. Remember to, like, generate that incredible ball of love that you are, so that's where it's coming from, that you're not a dry well. Oh, thank God, you know, we don't need more of that. You are this just well of love that's feeding you. And then from the overflow, you know, everybody else is wealthy. So, any questions? I think I've said a lot. And next week what we're going to do is go over what those seven causes are, because it's really like this seven-point plan. And the giving and taking is more like Tonglen, and we'll be doing that as well. So we have this week and next week, and then the 2 weeks after that, Venerable Robina will be leading. If you haven't met Venerable Robina, you're in for a treat. She'll be able to answer all your questions and more. So that's the third week. She'll be leading the third and the fourth week. The third week I won't be here. So if anybody can help set up and help with everything for Venerable Robina, I'd appreciate it, and I can talk to you after class. So one other thing to share. A lot of you gave a lot during this last little fundraising, and thank you very much. The center is incredibly grateful and indebted because that's what keeps this place going. There's a lot of places who are charging. A lot of places need to charge. We try to continue to offer all this on a donation basis only, so that a class this size and this long can be free to people who can't pay. It's on a scale, you know, for whatever you can pay. I know, like, I'm not getting a raise because I don't get paid. But one of the things I try to do, because my money's tight and I'm always being asked for money all over the place, so, and I love to give, but I just don't have that much. So one of the things Mother Teresa said, it's not how much you give, it's how much love you put into that giving. So somebody could have given $100, and that means very little to them. Somebody else is giving a dollar, and it's huge what they're giving. So you're the only one who knows that. And so you think about that and give from that kind of a place. So one of the things I do to try to accumulate little extra money is I have a place where I put all my change, and today I brought it to the bank, and $90. That was pretty significant, you know. And any little penny I see on the ground, I make a challenge for myself, like, let me see how much you can collect in a year. One year I collected like $40. It was because I found a $20 bill. So that helped. The next year I found 10. It's kind of going down. But, you know, usually I collect between like $7 just in pennies I find on the ground. It's a little game I play, and I pick them up, put them in a special bank. Then I've got another place for my change. Then I've got another place for, like, I'm a money machine. Another place for, like, if I have an unexpected windfall, like I know I'm going to go out to dinner, and then, I don't know, somebody decides they're treating everybody. Then, well, that's like $15 I just saved. So I'm like, take that $15 and put it in that pot, you know. So from those pots, I donate extra. Those pots for me are all about anything I can give then goes from those pots. So I get hyper motivated. I'm looking all the time for, like, oh, there's a penny, where's a nickel? So there's ways to scrounge up money. That's my point in that story, because you get asked a lot, I'm sure. All right, so now I forgot to remind you in the middle to generate that motivation again of why you're here. So I have to remember to do that next time. Kind of like the beginning, the middle, and the end. So now we're coming to the end, and I want you to think about, you know, that motivation and intention you set at the beginning. Were you able to kind of, you did, you set an incredible intention. So what we do at the end is we dedicate the merit that you have accumulated. And what that means is just that every action that we take is creating some kind of seed, a positive seed, a negative seed, or a neutral seed. And if you started your action with a really positive intention, that's a positive result. There was a little seed that generated from your energy, from your action. And yeah, it will definitely grow. But if you want to make sure that it grows in a certain way, then you dedicate it. You deposit it in the right bank account. So you can also think about how many other beings before you, all these people, Letitia, you know, His Holiness, all these incredible beings who have dedicated their merit. You can imagine that you're dedicating your merit into the same river that they are, and then it's just expanded. It's like if you put a bunch of rice into a whole pot of rice, you can't differentiate which rice is whose. That's another way to kind of increase your dedication. But so you take this moment to think about how you want the energy and the seeds that you created to ripen. And I would suggest that you dedicate them so that all the obstacles on your path to achieving complete, absolute bodhicitta are eliminated. And as the obstacles on your path to achieving perfect bodhicitta are eliminated, then you'll have the ability to get everybody else out. And that's what it's all about. So thank you very much for coming, and I hope to see you next week.